Radio on 96.9 KODX. We're in your community, on the air, and in your ear. The show starts in 3, 2, 1.
Hey everyone, this is Shiloh. Welcome to 321 Radio. We have a special guest today, Rick from University of Small Businesses. He's the president and the owner of Big Time Brewery. Rick.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Hey Rick.
Hello. Oh, hi. It's Lisa over here, Lebanese Dream Machine. That's right.
And Joe is on the mic as well. Thank you all for listening to us.
So, Rick, we're really happy to have you here, and, you know, we wanted to sit down and chat with you about what's going on, how's life and Big Time, and, you know, really start talking about how, you know, there's this dichotomy sometimes around small businesses and people, community organizers and nonprofits, and how they're somehow at each other's throats, which, you know, I think we all know isn't true, and it's much more complicated than that, and there's much more nuances, and there's also much more love and respect for programs and support and stuff. And, you know, as an example, you know, I spent a lot of energy trying to get Suboxone into this community and make sure we had treatment on demand, and, you know, you were honestly one of our biggest supporters of that. And, you know, you've asked me to speak in front of City Hall before, and I've been happy to do that because you do such amazing work in the neighborhood. So yeah, I would love to hear some of your perspectives on some of those issues.
Yeah, I would say to start, the kind of the riff between, you know, small businesses and nonprofits, it's not necessarily justified, and it's not a real thing. What you'll find a lot of times is community organizers and leaders that tend to have more political gains in mind that kind of try to build that mentality. And it's because they don't want unified communities. They don't want small businesses and nonprofits working together, because when you do, then you have a stronger voice. And at the end of the day, they want nonprofits to always kind of follow suit, because they can threaten them politically and say, hey, when you're going for the next grant, you know, we might not give it to you. And you need to not talk about this. You need to not, you know, be vocal about this. And so you kind of find that in the past, small businesses kind of fail nonprofits in the kind of like the public open sense of just everyday support. And that needs to change. And small businesses need to support, you know, nonprofits more. I mean, there's plenty of it out there, but you could always do more. And then nonprofits, you know, on the same side, you know, politically, if they could, you know, stand up more, like what you do when you go to City Hall with me, you know, it's huge, because now people look at it as it's community coming together. And that's a strong voice. If you get residents, nonprofits, you know, locals, small businesses with one voice that's clear for what they're trying to do within their community, that shakes politicians. And, you know, it's no secret that I'm not the biggest fan of Rob Johnson, who's, you know, our District 4 council member. And ultimately, you know, he's pushing for another upzone on the Ave again. And they try to sneak it in. And now we're going to have to push for that and fight that and really try to unite community and bring them together to try to, you know, keep small businesses and nonprofits from being priced out in the area. I mean, like, the church is a great example of that.
We know nothing about that. Oh, wait, yes, we do.
Can you speak a little bit more? What is the upzone? Tell me more about that.
So ultimately, they think that density is the key to solving the housing crisis in Seattle. But that's not justified.
Now I know what you're talking about. But please, for other listeners that don't know, please.
Yeah, so essentially they went through and they upzoned, you know, the key business districts of the city and key neighborhoods that they thought there could be the most growth. And the U District has already had the most upzoning. It's already had the most square footage. I mean, we're talking going from 2 stories to 32 stories. I mean, it's drastic change that they allowed to have, you know, happen here. And we fought it along the way, but, you know, we lost. But we did win on getting the Ave pulled out to conduct small business impact study and to see, you know, how it would affect, you know, a thriving business corridor if there was any more hardships and any more zoning and any more, you know, taxes, increase in property values, increase in triple nets. And at the end of the day, you know, we found that most businesses throughout the U District are very vulnerable, and we found that they're, you know, mostly, you know, minority and women owned. Mm-hmm. And so why would you try to cause a social injustice on a bunch of small business owners that are giving back to their community that are trying to survive, where, you know, everybody talks about like, oh, yeah, we have to do more for, you know, people from overseas. We have to do more for women in employment. Well, this is a great chance to do that. You know, they're living their dream. Don't take it away from them. And ultimately, they're trying to just go up, you know, a couple of stories, you know, on the Ave. Could be one, could be two. But what you find is a little sweet spot for developers to come in. And that's what you don't want to have happen. You don't want a sweet spot for maximum profits. And, you know, the difference between six stories and seven stories and eight stories doesn't sound like much, but to developers, it does. Because now that's enticing them to have that, you know, ultimate profit margin that they're looking for. So it's something that, you know, we have to kind of fight again. You know, we got to go down to City Hall. We got to stand up for what we think is right for the small businesses in the area and, you know, keep that grind going. And so, yeah, that's kind of the upzone in a quick nutshell.
Well, I also think it's important, you know, the upzone negatively affects small nonprofits, too, that are just trying to find cheap space and trying to do good works. I mean, for example, you know, if I was charged, you know, fair market rate, it would be hard to do this Boxone Clinic, hard to do the Neal Exchange. It
would be nearly impossible. Yeah. I mean, really.
And it's been small businesses like Allegro, Gargoyles, Big Time, who have always been there for us for years and always supported us. And, you know, when we needed help and support, they were there. I mean, some of the original supply closets for the Neal Exchange were actually in small businesses, you know. I'm thinking of Woolly Mammoth, you know, Express Aroma, which is now a cafe on the Ave, you know, Allegro. So, you know, I much more see, you know, people like Big Time as community members. And I think they're also this negative stereotype of the like greedy small business owner when, you know, they spend more money on the neighborhoods of which they are in, you know, around the Christmas season, around other seasons. And they're the ones hiring low income folks. They're the ones who are giving people a chance. I mean, honestly, I see them as, you know, programs like ours, natural ally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, speaking from somebody who's owned their small business, like, there's no such thing as a greedy small business. I mean, you're literally, like, always broke and always working. Like, I don't even know where that would come from. Yes, so greedy, you know? Ridiculous.
Yeah, people mix up the corporate business mentality a lot with the small business mentality. Yeah. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are small businesses out there that do have a corporate mentality, but most of them don't.
Yeah.
For most small businesses, I always think I envision like it's sort of the mom and pops or like the family business versus the, I don't want to call out anybody's name, but like a giant coffee shop that has a mermaid.
On no their names cup, called out at all. Yeah.
Or,
of course.
You know, an online thing that has Prime stuff.
I think I would call those corporations. I mean, you know, they started out very small. I mean,
but now they own
one
big blocks
and one did coffee.
Right, and now they own big blocks in downtown or Belltown and,
or in the entire city,
and then move people out and create jobs, yes, but also create more problems in terms of traffic and whatnot.
But people do mix those up, and I think that's definitely a thing, especially if a small business is quote unquote successful, which really means, you know, they're nowhere near, you know, something like Starbucks. I'll just call it out.
Starbucks? Is that what you said?
Yeah, Starbucks. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it is interesting because I think people look at it like, well, they started out as small businesses. So, you know, they could definitely get there. It's like that's, you know, that's 1% of small businesses.
Well, and also like in this neighborhood in the University District, we have a ton of legacy businesses. I mean, you know, I think of places like Gargoyles. They're on a one-story building, right? Therefore, you know, that's why they can do and create that great shop, you know? But if they were if they got torn into an eight-story building, you think their rent would be the same?
At the bottom of a condo?
There's a pho restaurant on the Ave who's paying like $8.50 a month. You know, and I was talking to the owner and she was saying, you know, when we get to 10,000, I have to leave this neighborhood. I just can't afford $10,000 a month.
And that'll easily happen.
I mean, I have,
you know, a friend who owns a, like a club on Capitol Hill. And I think when they moved in there, which was probably 8 years ago, it was $10,000 a month. And it's not that big.
Yeah.
So, and it's, I mean, I don't know what it is now, but I would imagine it's much more than that. I mean, it's insane for, and of course they had to raise their prices. That's the other thing. So you're like, okay, so normally, you know, you have these small businesses. They're like, you can get a bowl of pho for $7 or whatever. But, you know, if they raise it, their prices have to go up too. And then it ends up being this sort of vicious cycle within the city where it just, you know, it just kind of caters to people who have money.
And a $30 bowl of pho.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is a lot of pho.
Totally. But it's not.
It's not. Right.
It's just $30.
It's a lot for pho.
Yeah. And to touch on what you brought up earlier about, you know, the one-story building compared to, say, a seven-story building. Well, the developers will tell you, like, oh, no, like, rents are going to be cheaper because we have these other six stories of supplemental income, so we can charge less. But I have yet, and I would love somebody to prove me wrong, to bring up where they show a new development commercial build-out, you know, that's less than what they were paying before. Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, it's a drastic change. Like, I mean, sometimes it's upwards of 50%.
Wow.
And, you know, and when you're going from $20 a square foot to $35 a square foot or $40 a square foot, you know, like that is a big difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm yet to see that happen where it's like, oh, yeah, no, the rents are less. Yeah, well, I'd like to see one instance of that.
I think the other thing that from like an aesthetic point of view, when you've got the one stories, they're generally older buildings that have a little bit more character, that have a little bit more charm, that have history. And then you get these 7, 8, 24, 30 story buildings that are just cookie cutter. And they look very bland. And as a consumer, I'm less inclined to go in to even try the business. So it could be like an awesome small business.
Like, but I'm like, it looks like something in a strip mall.
Right. This looks like a Amazon building. Yeah. Like, I'm not going in there.
Sure. Yeah.
That's how I hid that.
I think there's a lot to say about decor. Like, you go into Big Time, right? You are going into this like little tiny piece of a brewery in the middle of a metropolitan area. And you have the windows where you can see the brewery in there. Mm-hmm. But you also have, you know, these great booths. And, you know, you almost look like with, like, some of the wood paneling and stuff. And it makes it almost feel like you're in this, like, weird, cool, like, glimpse in time.
Yeah.
Of, you know, you could be, I could see that place, you know, in Holland. I could see that place, you know, in Germany, you know. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I go there because of all of that. And, you know, also because it's like, you know, where all my friends like to go too. So that always helps.
And the ambiance is key. And what you find is when you have a business district that has small businesses that can afford to be there, what you'll find is they actually invest back into that community. They invest back into their businesses and they invest into this commercial district that now is thriving instead of failing. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what you want. You don't want to absolutely max out the rent on a small business owner to the, you know, what they can possibly afford to just break even. You know, if they do turn a little bit of a profit, it's usually very well spent. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough thing to find these days. Most small business owners, you know, are just trying to get by.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, the People's Harm Reduction Alliance and the University District New Exchange, for the listeners, we would not exist without small businesses. It was small businesses where Bob thought up the needle exchange to do it in the U District in the Allegro Cafe, talking to people who were in need, you know. And small businesses have repeatedly reached out and repeatedly been there for us, whether it be doing the fundraisers we do at Thai 65, you know, whether it be just a donation check at the end of the year, you know, whether it be a trying to help us do the Suboxone program. I mean, it was multiple small businesses who wrote letters and said, yes, we support this and we want this to happen in our neighborhood. So, you know, I'm incredibly thankful for all the incredible small businesses. And, you know, this is just someone who loves the U District with all my heart. You know, I think we have the best food in the entire city. I think we have the best shops in our entire city.
Of course
city.
You do, because you're biased.
I was like, are we getting into a debate now?
Yeah,
I think we it's coming.
You know, we have it all here. We have a great frame shops, to breweries. Like,
great frame shops, yeah. Really.
We have the best stamps and the post office.
Our post office stamps are better than all the other stamps.
I am curious. I totally get what you're saying in terms of like the benefit of the small business supporting.
So you acknowledge that the U District is the greatest
neighborhood
in the world?
I don't really
do. I did not say that at all. But I'd love to hear more about what the benefit of working with the nonprofit as a small business or the community-based organization. Like what does the small business get from that relationship?
Well, really, because it comes down to a small business owner is there because they care about that community and they care about that culture. And so what you find is the more integrated you get and the more that it becomes like a family, is everything. Because then it's you're not just going to a job, you're doing your passion every day. You're going and you're benefiting, you know, any nonprofit that's in the area. You know, say there's a food bank that needs food, or, you know, say Shiloh came to me, he's like, hey, you know, we're doing this grant, you know, can you help support us or anything? That's when you really get, you know, excited and really get passionate about what you're doing. And so the benefit I would say is mentally and physically and emotionally, and you know, it's how you build family.
It's the feel good. It's the community.
Well, yeah.
I think it's also the relationships.
The relationships.
It's the long term relationships that people have with a business. You know, from just eating food at that same restaurant. You know, I also feel like there's, I mean, you really can't discount the incredible hard work that small businesses do and, you know, and how, like, we create these alliances essentially to better the lives of the people we care about in our neighborhood. I mean, homeless people, let's be honest, you know, Starbucks isn't hiring them first.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be people like Rick who's
or
going to
second
get,
or third.
Yeah,
or,
I mean 25th. It's going to be people like Rick who's going to say, I need a dishwasher. If you're a hard worker, I'm willing to give you a chance.
Yeah,
you know. And honestly, that is exactly what community is. It's taking someone, you know. I had to grab a first job once, and guess what? It wasn't with a corporation.
No, mine was cleaning toilets. That was my first job in Seattle. So,
yeah.
Get it.
Oh, gosh. Okay. First job in Seattle, I worked at a recycling center. Yeah.
It's pretty close. Yeah.
Yes.
It's deep fried cook.
Dirty. There you go. Nice. Oh, you had to clean the fryer.
Oh,
that
yeah. I had to clean the fryer. Well,
no
but I also
fun.
Did, yeah.
No
I was at the original Wing Dome.
Ooh. Original Wing Dome.
I've yet to be to a Wing Dome.
Okay. We'll have to take you to a wing restaurant. Actually, don't you guys do good wings?
Oh, yeah, we do some good wings. Well, we don't go as spicy as the Wing Dome does.
Yeah.
That's
well,
sure.
I like some wings. I like some spice.
Well, I'll come. I'll drink because, as you know, I do not eat the meats.
Yeah.
I'll take your order. So what do you say, Henrik, to the naysayer that says, oh, there's a homeless crisis and there's an opioid epidemic and it's just hurting all the small businesses and it's making it hard for legit people, and I have air quotes, for those that can't see me, what do you say to that, to counter that and be like, well, actually my experience has been ...
I say, let's work together.
Yeah.
That's my answer. If you're a small business owner and you think you have to separate, you know, working with nonprofits that are trying to benefit homeless people and people in need, then you have the wrong mentality. You should be just trying to say, hey, like, okay, what are you working on? You know, is there anything I can do to help make it better, or, you know, financially or physically or whatever it is that you need help with? You know, like, let's try to do this together. And, you know, having community input is key, you know, having everybody's opinion, having everybody in the room just trying to have a common goal and common good, which is you should be trying to help people that are in need, you know, not trying to just brush them under a rug and make them disappear, because that doesn't work.
So
I actually have a question. You know, like, you were a huge supporter of our Suboxone clinic.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, there is that kind of like desperate need, you're a business owner here, of treatment for opiate addiction here. I mean, you know, kind of why did you support that, and what that meant, what did it mean to you for that to actually happen?
Well, I mean, I've lost one of my best friends to heroin, you know, and, you know, I think most of us at this point have been touched by it. And for people to just try to distance themselves from it and to try to not offer any resources or any help, you know, and just turn a blind eye is not the answer. That's just people trying to hide from problems that exist in our society. And that's, you know, that we shouldn't be doing that, you know, and treatment with Suboxone is a great way to do it. And, you know, I was so excited when you started pursuing that. I was like, wow, I mean, not only do you have the personal relationships with them, but now you have these other forms of treatment and other outs for them to continue to try to better their lives. And that's really what we should be trying to do and focus on, is allowing them to have whatever ability for next steps that they want to take. And then, you know, hopefully that they'll want to take them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you, like, we opened the door and it's been a floodgate, you know.
Yeah, there's no same day anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's like, we've served over 150 people.
Yeah.
See, that's...
And you know, and...
And it's been less than a year.
And yeah. How can a small business not support that? I mean, that's a miracle right there.
But yeah. Didn't it draw people into the neighborhood that weren't already here?
No.
Again, I've heard that somewhere before.
I think, you know, I mean, one thing I will argue too, and I've talked to small businesses about this as well, you know, they do have some issues of like U-District being the single service site for places, and they want more neighborhoods to do it. You know, like, it is true that Ballard should have a more, and like cities should have a more robust social service systems.
I think we do need to have this
decentralization kind of conversation around where services and businesses meet, you know. But I think there we will always be allies in solving the problems. I mean, also, you know, like, you know, the Cafe Racer shooting happened, and it was small businesses and nonprofits who went to, at the time, a deaf mayor and trying to get mental health services, yeah. You know. And thankfully, you know, we have a new mayor who's much more supportive of mental health services, and we have mental health access point here for the first time, you know, to be able to prevent things like the Cafe Racer shooting,
yeah.
And be able to get folks help, because people didn't choose to get schizophrenia.
No.
You know, so we should be engaging them, not telling them where they can and can't be.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it has to do, because that is really specific to this neighborhood. I mean, this neighborhood to me, I mean, I've lived here since 2003. And to me, this neighborhood is one of the neighborhoods that actually does look really similar to when I actually got here. It's one of the only ones left. And I think through that, there are these old sort of alliances, but also it's different in most other neighborhoods. Like, it really is pitting the small businesses against the nonprofits, against services, that sort of thing. So I think that's what's interesting about this neighborhood. And coupled with the Upzone stuff, it's very much like, once you get that Upzone, once you bring in new businesses, once you bring in all these new people, that could change, you know, because then there's going to be all these new people who haven't lived up here, all these sort of new businesses, these cookie cutter box businesses, that sort of thing. Yeah, you hate that, I know. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's the point where it's like, then they really come in and they use that. They pit, you know, they'll pit that. These two people against like each other.
It's an incentive,
you know?
To change exactly. The neighborhood, right? Where it's like, all right,
like the last bastion.
We're going to build this. Go ahead. It'll be great. And then we're going to get all these people that have never lived here before. And then as soon as they get there,
what could go
wrong? They'll be like, well, wait, why are these people here?
Well,
like,
you know, well, I mean, there's something. There's something really, I mean, for instance, up on Aurora, on 85th and Aurora, there's a tiny house village called Licton Springs. And it's a low barrier tiny house village that's been there for, I think, a few years now. Which I go up there on Mondays, and they've decided to shut it down. The city's decided to shut it down because of neighborhood complaints, but specifically because right behind it, they're building a 4-story condo that looks right into Licton Springs.
It's a beautiful construction, I've seen.
Isn't it? It's like yellow and boxy.
It's just so precious.
But, you know, at first, you know, we weren't really clear on why they were shutting that tiny house village down, because it had been really successful. Like, people were doing well there. And then it became very apparent once they started building up that condo. I walked in the courtyard and I saw it, and it literally towers above the Tiny Hills Village and looks right into it. And then it was like, oh, okay. So basically it's literally like we're building gigantic, you know, boxy condos for people to live in. And as a result of that, we are making people who were already experiencing homelessness, you know, homeless again.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think there's a lot of correlation between, you know, what's going on in the U District and what's going on in this city, you know, on a wider scale with, you know, with housing. And so if we're, you know, if they're pitting businesses against nonprofits, which is what's happening in every neighborhood, including mine, you know, all the time. I mean, you know, you move services out, you move people out, you put them, you know, at one end of the city and the service at the other. I mean, I don't know how we're going to be effective in anything we're doing if that's how we're playing this game. And I feel like that's what this city is doing. You know, they just, you know, they'll try to do their do-gooder, you know, Tiny House Village or whatever they're doing. But as soon as something better comes along that has more money, it's like, well, screw that. We're not going to do that. Let's just, you know, let's get rid of it. So, I mean, there's a lot there.
I think there's also there's definitely the power and the money. I think The U partnership that was supposed to be an alliance between nonprofits and residents, all this stuff, has just been a joke and a money grab. And
how do you really feel? Sorry.
I mean, how to be honest,
it's been a money grab. It's people with axe to grind, with people of the power who really are honestly destroying small businesses and nonprofits, and they want to be the new South Lake Union. They don't want to be the neighborhood that built all this community. I mean, U District and, you know, communities like this should be very proud of all the work they've mm-hmm. accomplished. You know, I mean, people, there's not that many hours in the day. You have exhausted small business owners, you have exhausted nonprofit workers, and they, despite all of that, they consistently go above and beyond mm-hmm. and to build community and to build resources and to make positive changes for their community. And, you know, for me, that's the Seattle, that's my Seattle spirit,
yeah.
right? It's yeah. it's that, you know, like we can decide what is right in our community, in our neighborhood, by talking to our neighbors.
Well, it's just that I think of, I'm not a U District native, but I like to come here. But on Capitol Hill, where I've lived for many a years, you know, there are so many businesses that are gone that were sort of my staples. Like mm-hmm. there was
Absolutely.
A little art shop / card shop that I would go to literally every 2 weeks yeah. to get, and because I love sending things in the mail. So I'd always go every 2 weeks and get new cards. And the gal that made the cards was there, and we would chit chat, and it was always sort of cupcake related. And I like cupcakes, and she likes cupcakes. And so, like, it was a very natural fit. But then now she's gone and got moved yeah. out. And now I think it's an ugly cookie cutter building.
Are you sending cards still? Are you making them yourself?
No, I am not that creative.
Because we probably have a card shop in the U District.
I do still send cards, and I should explore the card folk in the U District. Thank you.
You're welcome. Do that.
But Rick, I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
This is somewhat on topic, somewhat off topic. You are very passionate about community. You're very passionate about this particular community. Do you have designs on running for office or running for a position or maybe 2020?
You know, I would...
Presidency is going to be up.
Anyone
soon.
Can do it. Come yeah. on.
I would say you never know what, you know, happens in the future. But for right now, I think that small businesses and nonprofits need more help. And I feel I can give more help by me being there personally than instead by me being there politically. And so what we need to do is, you know, be there for each other. And if it's just answering a phone call, or if it's going to, you know, a fundraiser, or if it's going down to City Hall and fighting, you know, an upzone that they're going to try to hammer down our throats again in like January, February. You know, I think just kind of trying to still be a community organizer is where I need to be.
Okay. I would vote for you. I'm just saying.
I'd work in your campaign.
Right. Like I would sticker for you. I would write letters.
You guys are too kind.
I do like sending things in the mail.
Send off a bunch of ballots.
Oh, no, I won't do that.
We can start our card making business. It'll there be great. Yeah.
And buttons. I'm a big fan of buttons, yeah. So we can make some buttons.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, you know, hopefully you guys come down to City Hall with me and we fight the good fight here.
Yeah, you just let us know and we will always be there and we will always be partners with you. And I mean, I can't tell you how much we support you, Rick. I mean, you have gone so above and beyond for this neighborhood and this community, and you have, you know, you are for me what, like, the Seattle spirit is, you know, entrepreneur, like, trying to build the best product you can build, and also deeply caring about your neighbors and your community. I think people don't realize, you know, how many people you're the first call for help.
No.
You know, and so, you know, I really want to thank you for all of your great work in this neighborhood. And anyone who would like an incredible craft beer, you know, could wander over there.
Or
and
cider, I just got to say.
Yeah.
Cider's really good, too.
And food.
I've never been there, so tell us a little bit more about your...
I think that we need to change that.
Yes, but tell us and tell me and the listeners a little bit more.
Big Time is Seattle's original brew pub, and we just actually celebrated our 30th year 2 weeks ago.
Well, congratulations. Yes. And I'm not a brew... person, so I don't know what a brew pub means. I don't know what that means.
So a brew pub is a place that brews beer and serves it on site. And
okay.
So essentially what, you know, is now the beer culture in Seattle, you know, really started at Big Time, because that's the first time that you could watch them brew, you can engage with them, you can talk to the brewers when they're off work, have fun over a pint, and really try to create a beer culture. Which is interesting because what ended up happening is brew pubs and, you know, really a lot of breweries ended up being kind of the new community centers. And they ended up being spots where people would go for a date, where people would go for, you know, a political campaign rally in the back room, or, you know, a bachelor party or a birthday party, or, you know, a solemn time after a death in the family. All right. And really, it's a unique thing that kind of happened, because instead of, you know, feeling like you're going to a bar, you feel like you're going to kind of this like hip spot in between a restaurant and a pub that, you know, cares about craft with everything because they make it all themselves. And so they're putting their heart and soul into everything that, you know, essentially the people are enjoying. And it's a beautiful thing. And so when I worked for Big Time for years, and when the old owner, you know, was looking to sell, you know, I bartended 7 days a week for years and years straight, and, you know, took a couple days off in like 4 years and saved all my money and took on some private investors and, you know, made an offer and pulled it off. And, you know, I employ 18 people, and it's like having, you know, my own family, and it's the biggest honor I could ever have. But after I took it over, you know, then I wanted to focus on the food and the ambiance. And so then I invested heavily back into the business. And I think our food and beer game is on point. So I can't wait till you come in and try it with me.
Now, is it just beer and cider?
Yeah, beer, wine, cider, champagne. We could sell liquor. We choose not to, because we want to kind of appeal to the older crowd in the university district. And so, you know, we don't want a bunch of necessarily, you know, not that 21-year-olds are bad, but they're still learning how to drink. You know,
we all have our opinions on that.
It takes more patience to put up with, you know, a bunch of 21-year-olds taking shots than it does a family or friends coming in to have, you know, a burger and a good pint of beer. You know, it's a different mentality, yeah, if you will.
Again, sort of that fostering that little community of, yeah, like, it's a safe place for people to be,
yep,
whatever you're for people there to go. For.
Yeah, it's also where a lot of workers who work in small businesses go and drink as well. And you can kind of see people you've known, like for me, I've known for 10 years, you know, there, and we can talk about the politics of the day, or...
We've had a lot of after exchange drinks there.
Yeah. And, you know, it's... you also talk about how bad Seattle sports are.
That's happened too. Yeah.
Which is another topic that I'm very fluent in.
Or the weather.
I'm great with the weather.
All the time.
Yes. Finally a topic, yeah. I know.
You know what's really funny is, and it's so weird because we've talked about Big Time so much, like me and you, Shiloh, but I just had this memory pop into my head. I mean, I think you remember years and years ago when I was DJing around Seattle a lot. I DJed one time at Big Time Brewery, like maybe, I don't know, 12 years ago, probably. Maybe like a soul night. Yeah. And I don't know, it just popped into my head. I was like, oh man, that was the same place. It looked a lot different, which I think is why I didn't like correlate when I went in there. But yes, that happened. So I don't know. Doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about, but sort of does. So.
But I'm excited that there may be a soul night in our future.
Ooh, over some I do still have my turntables and I have all my records. I'm just going to put that out there.
Hey, let's make it happen.
We could do that. Yeah. We could do that. That would be cool.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely. I think that. Okay, so I think next time before the show, maybe we should go over to Big Time.
And since, visit again, that, I don't know, where is it located so that all of our fans can know where to go?
So it's on University Way on the Ave, between 42nd and 41st.
Okay, so it's right. It's
and
right
it's there. A legacy small business, correct?
Well, hopefully. We're trying to build that legacy program.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to support Lisa Herbold on that. And we made a pitch for a grant with our University District Small Business Association to try to build the U District as the first spot to kind of host the idea of a legacy business program, because we have so many iconic businesses here.
And help some of our listeners, what defines a legacy small business? Is it I've existed for 5 years and made it?
Well, that's
still one story.
Yeah,
it's funny you mention that. That's actually kind of the biggest heated topic about it, and how would you classify it? How would you, you know, kind of find, you know, the categories for it? And ultimately, what I would advise is that we build a board or a committee of small business owners in the city, where they essentially help write the guidelines for it, and not have a politician go in and do it. Actually, have people that are working, breathing the city every day that have been here for years. And it could come down to time. You know, time could be a huge part of it. It could come back to how much the community, you know, cares about it. And then it could come down to a lot of other factors as well. But I would say it's exciting that we're at least talking about these types of programs, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what would you consider the issues of being a legacy business? Like, I've been thinking about it. You know, I think the easy one is like, well, how long have you been there? But I think you're right. I think there are businesses who have been, you know, in different parts of the city for, you know, maybe shorter time as 5 years. And but they've become an iconic place where the community goes. And, you know, I think they're worth protecting, worth saving, you know, with that in mind. And I think other places, you know, the U District, we have businesses who existed for 40 years, right? And so they are obviously a legacy small business, but what about the, like, what short amount of time do you have to be in the U District to be a small business, business?
I feel like people in a neighborhood, I mean, I know in my neighborhood there are places I won't go, and then there are places that I very much want to go to, and it's because of their community involvement, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, if I'm going to, I won't name names, but it's a very small neighborhood. But, you know, if there's, you know, a place on the corner that I will absolutely never go to because they came into the neighborhood and they sort of came in with this like new idea. They bought up this whole block. They did this thing and, you know, it was very much like they didn't involve the neighborhood. They didn't involve the people there. And then they sort of just started bringing in people from elsewhere. Like they didn't try to get clientele from the neighborhood. They just tried to bring their clientele from their other place to, you know, the neighborhood. And
we're talking about Ravenna, right?
No. I'm talking about White Center. But, I mean, and I'm not talking about Drunky Two Shoes. I do want to put that out there because they're very neighborhood conscious. But, you know, this place just, they really depended on, like, let's bring people from outside the neighborhood. And that's who we're going to cater to. Now, I will say they have got a couple other kind of pop-ups inside, and one of them is becoming more community, you know, oriented. And I think that's because they're seeing that they're losing business because of it. So I don't, the motivation still doesn't convince me, like, that I want to go there. But, you know, the businesses that are new, you know, might be, you know, a little bit, like, different than what we've classically had there. But they have community involvement. They care. They come out to the meetings. They come out, you know, when there's something going on, when there's a death, something like that. And so you see them there. So So I do want to go there, you know, because I feel like they're trying to be part of the community and they want us to be involved in their business. So I think that's really important to people and they see it. So, I mean, again, if you've been there for 40 years, obviously you're doing something right. People are coming to your business. So right there, you're involved. But even if you've been around for 5 years, 2 years even, if you're really involved in your community. I mean, it should matter upon, you know, years, but definitely, I mean, that's a big one for me. And I think it is for a lot of people.
Well, and I think it speaks to what you were talking about earlier, Rick, in terms of like what if you're expecting a community, a neighborhood to invest in your business, what are you willing to invest in the neighborhood, right? Like what are you going to give back and how vocal are you going to be? How upfront are you going to be? How visible are you going to be? And I think that is that thing that draws us in. Like there are so many places, you know, where in the neighborhood that I work in or in the neighborhood that I live in that I just will never go to because I don't see people that look like me or that have the same values as I do. But I will always go to the places where I'm like, every time I go in there, they'll be like, hey, Joe, how's it going? Do you want another one of these? Yes, mm-hmm, I do. I'd take mm-hmm. two. Or, hey, you didn't make it in earlier and we sold out on this, but we saved you a couple because we know you really like them.
Everyone wants to feel special.
Exactly. and there is something, and that's, I mean, I guess that's the whole idea of community, right?
Well, I think a lot of it is when hard times happen, you know they're going to be there for you.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference, you know, and I think this is where we get into these talks about, you know, conflict and all this stuff. It's, you know, it's like, hey, here's a problem. We just want to know that you're going to be part of the solution and you're not going to get, throw your hands up and walk away, right?
Or exacerbate the problem.
Or exacerbate the problem. Like, we want to know that you're just going to be there and you're always going to be there for us and work with us. And then that relationship, like, you know, if you go into a business like me as director of the New Exchange and they call me and say there's an issue they have or whatever, so they don't talk about, we can disagree with what's happening. But the vast majority of times I'm going in there knowing that we're going to be family at the end of this. That's a different conversation. That's a different way of doing things. It's how we can solve this issue so, you know, we can get on to other, you know, other things.
And imagine instead walking into like a Papa John's or a Domino's pizza or something and trying to have those conversations.
Yeah, they don't.
It just doesn't exist in corporate America for the most part. You know, usually it's their leaders are out there making asses of themselves.
Yeah.
True that.
Not that we don't like pizza places.
Just not those. No, but I do think they're really, I mean, like you said, Rick, like they're really similar in the way that I feel like these days owning a small business and working for a nonprofit or running a nonprofit, it's a different realm than what it classically has been. Because most of what you're doing really, especially in this city, is fighting politics. You're fighting the city to continue doing the work you're doing or to continue having your business. So, I mean, it really comes down to, it is a lot of extra work, not only to have a small business, not only to have a nonprofit, but then you've got these other things on top where, you know, we're not politicians, but then we have to become these sort of like
political beings,
political, you know, half politicians, half, you know, small business owners, half, you know, politicians and half, you know, working for nonprofits. And it just becomes very, I think it becomes stressful. It becomes a lot. So I think it's really good, as you said, to support, you know, and that's, as I said, what we're missing in so many neighborhoods. I mean, it's just, there's a split and you're right. It's on purpose, you know, it's on purpose to split us apart because we are really similar. And, you know, I think they can't shove through with their plan on like gentrifying everything and upzoning everything and bringing more money, you know, and we're sort of stuck at the bottom. We can't do anything, you know, what are we going to do? But if we get together, I think we can do a lot.
Which I think is a perfect plug, because I like to plug things. you know, this is the season where people are buying lots of stuff that they don't need, that they don't want. What about take a moment and go to a local business, a local small business, mm-hmm. and do your Christmas shopping or holiday shopping there? You know, get some gift certificates from the big time or from the local card shop or the framing shop, but really support those businesses and show, like, you don't have to go to Amazon for everything. You can support the little guy or gal and make a difference.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just another pitch, like you go to Gargoyles and you can get you know, a mermaid. You can get lots of different things there. And most of them are one-of-a-kind, made by one-of-a-kind artists. Yeah. Right? You can go and get a gift certificate at Big Time and other places where, you know, it's you're not going to somewhere else. You're going to Big Time. You know what you're going to. You know the atmosphere you're going
to
have.
Everybody likes a gift certificate, to a brewery. Like, yeah. Who doesn't want that?
One of my favorite places to go when I go to Albuquerque to visit family is this little shop that has lots of, like, horrible tchotchke, like, souvenir-y stuff, but they have a whole section that's all, like, handmade jewelry. I like turquoise. But the artists are there working. And so, like, you can say, like, oh, I really like that ring. And somebody in the back will be like, I made that. And so you can have a conversation with somebody about, like, this is a one of
them. Yeah, I like that.
This is not something that you're going to find on some random website that's got, like, the same thing in 40 different colors. But it's something new and something different.
Well, and supporting an artist to their face is, like, kind of a big deal these days, you know?
It's a good one. And I think food and drink is an artistry of its own. So restaurants, I definitely would include that in there.
And really the art culture, too, I feel like is one of the things that we're losing the most. That's mm-hmm. a community that's been really struggling. And we need to do more art walks. We need to stand up more for artists and see what they need and what we can do to help them.
They need to get paid for their art. I mean, yeah. that's...
or have affordable places to do their
art.
Well,
and, you know, most of the art that happens these days is there's a lot of the pop-up, like, flea markets and artist markets and that sort of stuff. You know, but it's also, I mean, that's not sustainable for anybody. You know, it's like you go out, you set up your tent, you sell a couple things. You know, but I think it's interesting... This city was built on art and music. You know, that was a big part of our culture for so long. And people still like to tell, like, is, but, you know, it's
not. You can't afford to do it. I mean, I remember when I first moved here, like, discovering Pioneer Square on an art walk night mm-hmm. and being blown away, like, wait, I'm going into people's art spaces / living spaces, and they're giving me cheap champagne, and I'm looking at this incredible art that they're creating in their homes. Wow.
Yeah.
And then that's all gone.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not a thing. Well, because nobody has an art space anymore. Like, you know,
nobody can afford it. And then, you know, it's true. Small businesses do employ this amazing artist, Kimber. She's working on a 4x4 foot painting of an elephant walking through hop fields. Oh, nice. So, Kimber, if you're listening, I hope you're working on the painting.
Yeah.
try to get it to me by the end of the year. That'd be great.
A couple of days.
Yeah.
Right? No pressure.
And you do find that. You do find people, you know, standing up and trying to help when they can. And even if it's, you know, a job or a side project or just, you know, word of mouth or helping with a resume or, you know, whatever it could be, you know, and that's one problem that people kind of forget about with the homeless issue is it's not somebody else's issue. It's everybody's, mm-hmm. you know, and we all need to be there for them. And, you know, whether it's, you know, making sure they have clean needles or a warm bed at night to sleep in or hot food to eat, you know, it's everybody's.
Access to low barrier treatment.
Yeah.
In a non-judgmental way.
Exactly.
What?
No, go figure.
No, I mean, we have to take care of each other. I mean, it's not, it's like you can't say not in my backyard because this is your backyard. Well, it's Seattle. We all live here.
Yeah,
like,
I think it's about love, really. It's about, you know, that building people's self-worth and self-confidence. You know, we've all had be that first job that we felt like, oh, there's no way we could be able to pull this off. And yet we survived and we kept doing it. And, you know, it's like giving people opportunities. And, you know, I'm one of those people who lived on the streets of the University District. And I was given an opportunity and I never looked back. Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, you and I am a resident of this neighborhood, you know. And so I think it's really important that, you know, the thing that makes me fear the future of the city is, you know, how could someone afford to live in this neighborhood coming off the streets now? Like, you know, Rick, you could
it's
give
not
someone
possible.
Yeah, you could give someone a job today and, you know, but like they'll probably end up having to live in Tukwila, right? And then
they don't have a car and
they don't
it's
have a
like
car.
Trying to get up
then,
here.
And then we've got Amazon, so the traffic is terrible.
So they can come late, which could end up losing them their gig. Mm-hmm. And or you might need an employee, you might need to call someone in an emergency and they could say, yeah, I could be here in 2 hours, where you're like, well, that's not really good enough for me because I need them now, right? So you don't have that ability, and honestly, that and it you make these commuter communities.
Yep.
Right. And that's the thing that honestly breaks my heart about this town. I feel like we've lost our roots, and we've lost, you know, what the kind of neighborhood communities that we had before. And it's honestly, you know, people like the university, small businesses. That are fighting to keep that.
Yeah, and it's true. The university district is the last small business incubator in the city, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, where else are you going to find as many small parcel units for commercial storefronts than here? And, you know, it is something worth preserving. It is something standing up for. And that's something that we all need to do. You know, we have to understand, like look at ourselves in the mirror and be like, do we want to just go to corporate white-walled chains, or do we want to actually go to places that we care about? And who probably actually in return care about us. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference right there. So, I really hope that, you know, we can fight this up zone coming through, and people write their council members, and we get enough media and stir up that they can get scared about it, like what happened with the show box.
Yeah.
But, you know, it takes people caring. And at the end of the day, too, sometimes people are like, oh, the university district's kind of run down. Oh, there's a lot of homeless street kids. It's like, no, go check out these businesses. Check out these nonprofits. There's a lot to, you know, offer here. You know, look at Scarecrow Video. Look at the seafood shop. Look at Cafe Allegro, Gargoyles. I mean, the list could just go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And it's really unique, and it's really exciting. And we just need to get people stoked about small businesses again, rather than just going on their phone and buying stuff on Amazon.
And it's also important, there's poverty all throughout this city. And there is, this isn't, you know, sometimes you get, I think Utica gets unfairly targeted sometimes of like, oh, there's poor people who live there. There's poor people who live in every neighborhood. We have the third largest homeless population in the country, and they don't all live in the U district.
No, they're throughout the entire city.
You know, and so, you know, and, you
I mean,
know.
I don't know, man. I find it interesting, you know, what you were saying about it, like the U district is quote unquote, you know, run down. I mean, to me, it just looks like old Seattle.
Yeah.
So
it just looks like
a
city.
That's the thing. Like, so have we become, you know, this like totally whitewashed, totally like box cutter city to the point where there's so many new people like don't even recognize their own city anymore. I mean, you know, it's like, to me, like I like coming here. This is what Seattle looked like.
Yep.
And it looks the same still to me. I mean, not totally the same, but pretty close. It's one of the last places that looks similar, you know? And so I always feel good when I see it, like, okay, like there's something left, you know? And I miss that. I know a lot of people do. So I find it interesting that, I mean, that's, people correlate a rundown place with what this city's soul is. And it's like, well, that says a lot right there, you know, about what's happening here and the people who have moved here, you know?
So for folks that sort of share this idea or this vision, and you sort of spoke to this a minute ago, Rick, but what should they be doing to support the, what would we call it, the down zone versus the up zoning?
Like, just the regular zone?
I like that, down zone.
How do we get the down zone on the regular zone on this? Like, what should we be doing to support this cause so that you're not the lone voice, though you're very eloquent?
Yeah, I would say going to the places that matter most to you. And going out and supporting those spots whenever you can. And it's true. Like, I've got friends and family that they go on their phones to like buy stuff, and they're like, what are you doing? You know, like let's look around us. Like, type in even on Google Maps and just see what's around you to see what you could go support locally. And, you know, sometimes sure it might cost 10% more or something like that, but the experience that you're probably gonna have in that establishment is probably worth that 10% price tag every time. And then you, who knows, maybe you just could have walked in and made a new friend. You know, maybe it could be the godfather to your kids one day. You know, you never know. And that's the problem is when we get so focused on our phones and our tablets and our media devices that we don't, you know, engage community and we don't engage the people around us is really, you know, a detriment to it. And that's one thing that small businesses really thrive on is they say hi to you when you walk in. Mm-hmm. They engage you. You know, not everybody wants to have a social encounter, and that's fine. And people usually make it very clear right away.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know.
They're like, hi.
You've experienced
all right.
That?
Yeah.
But, you know, at least it's there, you know, and at least they know that, you know, there's somebody to talk to if they want to talk. And that's everything in my point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that because there's people who come to the exchange and you're like, yep, you do not want to talk to me whatsoever.
No. Yep.
And then there are people who want to ask me 1,000 questions. Yep. And I'm like, yep.
Or well, tell you, you know, every car they've ever owned in their entire life.
I feel like that's make, very model. Interesting. I mean, you know, I have days where I don't especially want to have a conversation with somebody, you know, and that, I mean, that's fine. But, you know, that's a great thing about, you know, small businesses and people who own them. They're usually pretty good at reading people. So they'll generally be like, oh, you don't want to talk. I'm going to leave you alone. So
here's your beer.
Yeah. And now I will go. Thank you. Come talk to me after 3 of those. Yeah. And then we'll have a conversation. Right. You know, so.
And it'll probably be a fun one.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned that going to City Hall. Is there any scheduled dates that you want to
January 7th, I think. If I need to check my calendar. I think that there's some meeting that they're trying to do for amendments to the upzone. And so we need to go there and, you know, have our voices heard that this shouldn't even be on the table. And there's no justification for it. Where's the data from the city that shows they have to start ramming these things down our throats? It's not there. We've already upzoned the city for growth for probably the next 100 years, in my opinion. You know, like, when does it stop? When does it end? When do we stand up to development firms? And when do we stand up to these large corporations that are just taking our city away from us? Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do, is we have to put people in office that will do that.
And I wonder, is there information that you can send us that we can put on our Facebook or our Twitters or Instagram? I know, I'm so terrible with that one. That we could, so if folks are interested and want to show support or want to write certain people or show up.
We have a website.
That we can post it.
But I definitely want to make sure that we have the website updated and running before we start plugging it. I would say anybody that's interested can just email me directly, rick@bigtimebrewery.com, and we can start having conversations together. Because I find that that's the easiest way, is just to have that direct contact.
So that's rick@bigtimebrewery.
BREWRY.com.
Okay. Yeah. Watch out.
Watch out.
You might get some love letters too.
Yeah.
Well, is this videoed? Or
No, it's just you're sitting in Kevy's seat. So, oh, yeah.
So we have 3 minutes. And so any last words?
I just want to give a shout out to my fellow co-hosts, Lisa and Shiloh, that I wish you guys a very good, happy, healthy holiday.
Why, thank you.
Thank you.
And hopefully there's no more terrible things that happen this year, although we
Lord
never
of the
know.
Mercy.
Yeah, 2018 was tough for a lot of people.
Yeah,
it was a rough one. It was, yeah, and the hits keep coming.
Yeah, it's not over yet.
We got a week and a half.
Well, you know, a week and a half to end the world there.
Could happen.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we can just go get some drinks over at Big Time and everything will be fine.
And yeah. I heard burgers.
Yeah, burgers, wings, pizza, fish and chips.
Ooh,
yeah.
I haven't had a good fish and chips in a while.
Yeah, and we beer battered in house ourselves.
Say, beer battered.
Hopefully, it would be beer battered. Oh, if it's a brewery.
That's fun.
So yeah, I want to wish people really happy holidays, and I know that there's a lot of depression out there and a lot of people who feel alone. And please, I do want everyone out there to know that you're not alone. Please reach out to people. I think a lot of people fail to reach out to ask for help. And I think this is a great time to do that. And so just, you know, I want to make sure everyone has a really safe time. And if there are any drug users out there listening, please do not use alone. Do not use stimulants alone. Our drug supply is tainted. And you can always contact us for clean and safe supplies, or if you want help transitioning off of drugs.
And naloxone.
And naloxone.
And counseling.
And friendly the faces. Things. These two faces are so friendly. Come visit them.
Yeah. I guess we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.